So, we now know how to make cars, but how do we mix these games? So, it's just like mixing Fellini media, isn't it? No, it isn't. Yeah. So why is it different? Well, in linear media, everything happens the same way every time. It's very easy. We spoke about this before. If you've got a car driving down the street and it goes around the corner, you can recall the car driving around the street, going around the corner. It's the same every time you see it. As you saw in our game, you can do anything you like, so it's different every single time. And what you hear is carefully crafted by the mix engineer, hopefully. So they can make sure that anything that needs to be heard at that moment is clear and precise. It's been happening that way for many years. So, but with games, I've got no idea what's going to happen next. So how am I going to play back my sounds in real time, but I also need to mix my game in real time too. And this can cause many problems. But there are several ways this can be achieved. Number one, set it and hope. Just tell your sounds, this is how loud you're going to be, and then let the game do everything for you. It is an approach. It's a way you can do it. In some games, I'll talk about this later, but in some games, it's not a bad way to do things. Number two, mixer snapshots. So in this case, I've got different game scenarios defined. I know what's going to be happening at different times. And I can create a snapshot and say, okay, well, at this time, I want you to focus on this, so I want my faders to be here. But now, I'm doing this, so I want my faders to be here. And you're just constantly adapting between different mix states at any one time. So the game's telling me I'm doing this, and my mixer's adapting accordingly. So a very simple version of sort of adaptive real-time mixing. Number three, compressors and side chains. This is my personal favourite, and how I do a lot of the work that I do is I will group all my sounds into a series of submixes on buses, and then I will be monitoring the RMS of that bus, and then using that to control the volume of other buses via a side chain. So, for example, a great way to do this is tyres. I know that when I'm starting to slide, I need to hear my tyres probably more than I need to hear my engine at that point. So if I put a side chain between the tyres and the engine, I can use the volume of the engine, of the tyres, to turn down the engine as the tyres come up. And then as the tyres go away again, my engine returns to its normal volume. Collisions would probably be tied into both tyres and engine. So tyres can override engine, but collisions can override tyres and engine. So we create this huge sort of hierarchy and this huge complicated mix setup. But we can use the volume of some sounds to duck out other sounds and clean up the mix at the appropriate time. And finally, the new way that people are heading, HDR mixing. Now, HDR stands for high dynamic range. And the concept here, which was pioneered by EA and one of their internal audio engines, is that every sound is given a relative volume value compared to every other sound. So, for example, an ambience may be given 55 dB, footstep given 65 dB, talking would be 80 dB, a gunshot's 150, explosions are 180, whatever you want to do, you play around with those levels. And then what the game does is, as these sounds play, it works out how loud that sound is based on its natural volume and how far away it is to give you a final volume value which it will play at in the game relative to the other sounds. So when a big gunshot goes off or a big explosion happens, all the quiet sounds just automatically turn off. And then as that sound stops playing, all the sounds come back up. So it's a similar approach to compressors and side chains. It's just a different implementation, but it's all based on real-world numbers. You can actually play around with actually plugging real-world numbers into your sound. So this is a new technique that's been developed. A lot more game studios are using this now. One of the biggest pieces of middleware that's out there that we use to implement sounds in games is a software called Wyze, and this is being added to their software very soon. So this is something we're going to be seeing a lot more of moving forward. So, is there anything else to consider? Yes. So, we've talked about this before, but almost all sounds in modern games will move around relative to the player, so we need to not just be thinking about is the sound playing, but where it's playing from. Do we want to sidechain individual speaker outputs together so that we're only ducking out the... If the tyres are skidding on the right of the car, do I want to be ducking out the engine on the left of the car, or do I actually just want to be ducking it out where it's actually coming from? So, something we need to consider. Games need to have an audio system that can deal with attenuating sounds in real time based on distance, direction, orientation, and is there anything obstructing the sound you're hearing? If you're in a, playing a game like Halo, and the guy who's shooting at you is shooting at you from behind the wall over there, we need to make sure that it sounds like it's behind the wall over there. So, we talked before about distance and direction and orientation, but obstruction is something that's less important in racing games because there's very rarely anything between you and the car you're on. You're on a racetrack. But in a lot of other games, it's a big part of how we mix the game. So, usually we'll do this with volume, panning, filtering, but Doppler shift for moving sounds, modulation effects for different sounds, all this I've spoken about before, but it's all something we need to consider when mixing the game. And the environmental audio we talked about before. So all of these things are things that we may want to adjust to alter the mix and how sounds interact with one another at any one time. So, which is best? Well, different types work better for different games. If your game has very little audio, or it's 2D, if you're just creating a little iPhone game with just a few little interface sounds, set it and hope's fine. There's no need to do any complex mixing in that case. You know, if sound's not a big part of your game, there's no need to spend a load of time trying to be too clever about doing it. If your game's very scripted and you're generally aware of when mix changes will happen, mixer snapshots is not a bad approach. If you're playing a very sort of linear corridor-based shooter, where it's a case of you're in this room and things will attack you, so we want the mix to be this, but then when you leave the room, nothing's going to attack you in the next section, so we want the mix to be this, and then as you enter the next room, we want the mix to change to this. So a much more scripted approach, mixer snapshots is a good way of doing things. But if your game's very dynamic, like a racing game, you'd need to do side-chaining or HDR, really, to get the best approach, to make sure that all the sounds are always being heard when you need to hear them. So, it depends on the type of game you're making and how much performance budget you're prepared to allocate to it. So what's a performance budget? I know people who don't work in games will probably want to know what that is. So, one area where we are very different is we have restrictions placed on us in audio that are the target capabilities, the capabilities of the target platform. So, as we generate audio in real time, we're mixing in real time, we have restrictions on how much CPU and memory usage, and this varies greatly from system to system. The modern consoles have fixed amounts of CPU and memory. PCs have very variable amounts of CPU and memory in them that you need to take account of. When I started out, we were making games on the PS1 and that had 512k of memory and a tiny amount of CPU and a maximum amount of 24 voices that you could play simultaneously. That was not a fun time to be doing audio for games. But it was a very creative time. Some of the stuff that I do now, I probably don't think about the way I did then, because before it was a case of, how the hell am I going to do that? Well, now it's a case of, oh, I can do that. That doesn't even enter into my head now as how am I going to do it. And some of the most creative stuff I've probably come up with is at a time when there was no way I could do what I needed to do with what I had. So you had to be very, very clever about the ways you did it. So in some ways, even though we've got far more available to us, we're probably not as creative as we used to be. Or we're trying to be creative in different ways. You know, I suppose it's much like trying to mix a record in the 60s versus now. You know, if you're trying to do it on four-track tape, it's a whole different world to what you've got available to you now. But people still make great stuff. So it's all here. Voice counts improved. Real-time DSPs become available up until The Xbox was released. There was very, very little real-time DSP apart from low-pass filtering ever done. And that sort of opened up a far bigger world to us with real-time DSP, as that actually had a DSP chip that you could program in the console, which was just like, oh! That was the best day ever. So that's it then, mixed game.
No.
So, this is an area where I bang on a lot and I annoy a lot of people. So if I annoy anybody today, tough, I don't care. But games, like a lot of forms of media, can be played on so many different devices. Cell phone speakers, flat screen TVs, high-end home theatre systems. How are we going to make the game sound as good as it can everywhere it's going to be played? So, for me, it's focusing on, well, how can I make a mix that works on these playback systems as possible, focusing on the most common playback scenario. So, many people, some in this room maybe, may tell you that the games industry will say, oh, 5-1, everybody's got 5-1 these days. I am not one of them. I still firmly believe that the majority of the people playing games these days are playing games on TVs. Bad news, folks. And it's TVs with really small speakers.
Well, in the music world, I deal with laptops and iTunes.
Yes. And here's more science for you. The laws of physics say your 1/100th bass dump is not going to work on a flat screen TV. I'm sorry, folks, it just isn't. But I believe there is a way to maximise the sonic qualities of mix for every playback system, and especially for games. When I make a sound, or when my team are making the sound, I always get them to verify it on a low-end system. Roll off the extreme lows, test it out to make sure we've still got the low-mid punch that you need to cut through on TV speakers. And you've got your sound, but it's going to be lacking low-end for those with a high-end system. So then put it back in with a dedicated LFE sample. The people who are going to hear it in 5-1 are going to have an LFE. The LFE is there to be used. So why not have your low end in the low end, in the LFE where it belongs, and try and keep all the stuff that's below 100 hertz out of your main speakers. It doesn't need to be there for the majority of people who play games. To do this, we have Avantone Mix Cubes. Now, some of you may know of these speakers, some may not. It's a little speaker about this big, a 4-inch driver. It sounds like shit. But it's designed that way. And the best thing is, it's a universal shit, so it doesn't matter where you put them, they always sound bad. But it allows me... Yes. But it allows me to have them. We have them in our demo room, where our management review the game. We have them in our mix rooms, and it's a constant verification. And what we found is that if it sounds good on those, it'll sound good on just about anything. I'm sure the music industry thought NS10's the same way.
Yep.
So there are many speakers out there that do this, but every sound you make, test it. If you come up with the greatest sound in the world, you plug it into your game, you take it into the management reviewing room, they put it on the TV and go, what was that? You haven't done it right. I'm sorry. I'm a firm believer that make your sound good for the most people who are going to play your game. Make it sound good on the TV. Sorry. I'm going to calm down now.
Deep breaths. I feel your pain.
Deep breaths. So, what does that sound like? Well, I have a demo. I'm going to play you the last game I made before I left the UK, which was Blur. This is a racing game developed for Activision. It's a racing game with power-ups. So we have real cars. We're still using the same techniques to make the cars. But this time we've got loads of otherworldly weapons shooting shit at you from every direction. Great. So, if this has worked, it should have booted up.
Yay!
Thank you. they're okay. So, I made this game. Up until yesterday, I didn't own this game, so I've not unlocked anything yet. I managed to leave before the free copies were given out, so I had to go out and buy one yesterday because I thought this was the perfect example of demoing this, and then I realised I didn't actually own it. So, apologies for not being able to show you something from much later on in the game. But this is a great example of what I want to do. So here, I'm going to race around Amboy on Route 66. So it's an off-road track, you're going to hear lots of dirt sounds. There's 20 cars on the track, all firing stuff at me. Pickups, Mario Kart style the whole way. But the big thing you're going to hear is how we dynamically mix this game. You'll hear that every time we fire a weapon, we're playing around with the mix, we're ducking things in and out. Tires are affecting the engines, there's a huge amount of mix work going in here. Pretty crazy stuff.
How did you do the sound when the car got airborne and then hit the ground?
We took a car, put it on a crane, lifted it up, dropped it, recorded it.
Nice. But
so
that
was
fun.
A simulation of the M25?
Yeah. So, interesting to note there, it's one of the games I'm proudest of from a mixed perspective. There's 20 cars driving around the track. How many of them were ever audible?
Two or four.
Yours and one other. And we discovered that's all we ever needed because the mix was just too full. Yeah. If we put any more in, it was all getting in the way. Yeah. And for me, it's all this game was all about, with the mix, it was all about subtraction. It was all about, here's a big sound, let's make everything else go away. Now, some of the weapon effects that you heard, as you were getting hit by them, we wanted to do something cool and interesting. So when you get hit by certain effects, we actually have like a real-time bit crusher. We have a real-time ring modulator. We have real-time flanges and phasers, and various filters. And they're all being applied either to your car as it hits you or to the other car that it hits as it hits them. So you get all these really weird, crazy effects. But all that came together to deliver this. But one of the coolest things, I may be able to do it. Here, I think there's one. I'll pause it because it's too noisy. Is the shield. Because we made the shield covers your car. And we thought, Oh, well, if it's a thing that stops things hitting you, it should probably stop sound getting through it. So when the shield's applied to your car goes all sort of muted and distant inside this bubble. But then if you change the camera view, so you're inside the bubble, all the outside sounds get filtered. So it was a really crazy way of sort of playing around with that whole effect of this shield is actually stopping sound. It's not just stopping all these powers. So, see if I can make it happen. There's one just down here. So my car is very broken. If I apply it, it makes my car go away. When I'm inside it, I can hear my car. And it's just the little things like that that made all back to full health again. So, huge amount of mix work went into this game. We were lucky enough to get about 4 weeks to mix, which is unheard of in the mixing of games. Usually you get a week if you're lucky, so it made a big difference. Question?
Just what I was hearing, am I correct in hearing that you guys added the sound of like the rocks sitting inside the fenders in
there? Yeah.
Awesome.
That is one of the most complicated systems I've ever built and one of the most fun things I've ever done, because we were driving on gravel and we went down to Anaheim to the Orange County Speedway, and we had a drift driver for the day to record tire sound. And the idea was we were going to record it dry, and then we were going to get a water truck out and hose the whole thing down and then record it all wet. And then we were like broke for lunch and we were sitting down. I'm like, what's that over there? And walked over, it's this huge gravel parking lot, and it's like, get over there now. So we got this drift guy driving around on this gravel. We broke 4 microphones. We smashed up his car. I didn't care. It sounded great. But when we got back, what we noticed was the recordings were great. And we had all this kick up and all this noise. But it was missing the definition. It just didn't sound clear enough. So it's like what we need is the sound of all the stones hitting it. And we thought, well, if we build a system out of just single ones, just little dinks, and then play lots of them all the time, and put them on a sort of randomization, so we're playing different samples in different sequence with slight different variation in them, that should sound really cool. So, one of the guys at work had just been in a big car crash. So, we asked if we could have all the parts of his car that they were replacing. So we got a fender, we got a door, we got a hood. They were all bent. And we took them out of the back of the building we were working in at the time, which was pretty quiet. We're in this sort of business park. And we bought a bag of stones from the local garden centre and then spent the day throwing stones at old car parts, recording all these little individual dinks. And then it's just like, all right, we can drive on mud as well, so we should get sort of mud sounds. So we're in the dirt, making this ball, throwing them at the car all day. That didn't really sound right, though. We wanted something wetter. So we then went out and got a big sort of kitchen roll, soaked it in water, and then we're throwing these little sort of wet paper balls at this door for like 2 hours. Great fun. Great fun. But what we did then is we cut them up into all their individual samples, and then we thought, well, we've got these light sort of gravelly stones, and then we've got these heavier sort of sounds, these dull sounds, and then we've got these wet squishy sounds. And this game has a load of off-road surfaces to drive on. So we said, okay, well, gravel is mostly small stones with some big stones. But then dirt is mostly big stones with a bit of wet and a bit of small. And mud is all the wet stuff with a little bit of the sort of heavy stuff. And all we did is we varied the amount of each that played and how often as you went across each of the surfaces. So it was going from, you have these underlying sounds underneath, but you're getting all these little dinks, and that's what created that sound. And that was a lot of fun to do. Used a lot of perf, though. My programmer was not pleased. But we made it work, and I'm pretty happy with the result.
So did you limit the amount of rocks that were playing at once? Like,
like how many channels were you using?
5 per tire. Per stone type.
Right. So you can just kind of keep firing them.
So yeah, it was a maximum of, if I remember right, you could have, the worst case scenario was dirt, and that could have up to 5 heavy stones with 2 light and 2 squishy per tyre. So that'd be 9 per tyre, so 28 maximum just for that. And then the loops underneath, and then the cars, and then the weapons, and then everything else. Peak voices on that was, we were using a proprietary engine, which was very good. I think peak voices on that was 225 per frame. For the whole thing, which is pretty good going. Wish I had that now. So let's go back to laptop.
Well, that's 225 channels. Is that EDPCM or MP3 or AUG? Or
that was XMA on 360 and combination of MP3 and ADPCM on PS3 and PCM on PC, because that was a multi-format release. Questions?
The Doppler for Forza.
Yeah.
Was that? Did you use FMOD to do the Doppler? Did you like vary RPMs and kind of like overdrive?
We feed the Doppler value as a pitch value into the game, calculates the Doppler, and then feeds it in as a pitch value into FMOD.
So it's taking the mix and changing the pitch from that. You're not.
We're applying it per object.
Yeah.
So, one thing we did have to do with that, because it created something that's probably real but sounded completely wrong, is because the car's built from the different components, and those components are ever so slightly offset from one another within the car model, you got some weird effects that as the car went by you, the engine would Doppler shift slightly differently to the exhaust, and that sounded completely broken. So we do make it so that it's Doppler shift per car. And it's not per emitter, it's one Doppler shift, but it's applied to all the emitters separately.
Hardware budget for Blur versus Forza for audio. It's about the same.
One core, 22 meg of sample memory.
And how well did that compare to when you move a different platform? PS3 has better audio, less audio, you need more?
Less. A bit less. We needed more CPU to do the same amount of work. And we had the same amount of memory, but because MP3 was expensive, we could only do a certain number of MP3 sounds. So we had to do ADPCM, which gives us a bigger memory hit. Because it's less compression. So.
And is that from because you have to do 2 more channels on the PS3? Up to 7.1?
No, that's because there is no... The Xbox has built-in perceptual codec in hardware, and the PS3 doesn't. So, just different formats.
When you're recording on a dyno, like inside, do you have to dampen the room at all, or are the mics close enough?
We try and dampen the room where possible, especially if we're using different distant mics.
Yeah.
If you ever get the opportunity to do so, in the UK, the Motor Industry Research Association has a dyno in a semi-anechoic chamber, and it's brilliant. And it fits a double-decker bus in it. It's this huge semi-anechoic chamber with a dyno in the middle. But don't stand in there to monitor your levels when you're recording a Porsche Boxster, because you start feeling ill. And then you say, what's that light? And they say, oh, that's the carbon monoxide warning light. You should probably go outside. That wasn't a fun day.
Since they probably did not build that facility to make games, why did they have the acoustic treatment?
Because they use it. The car manufacturers take new cars there to listen for unwanted rattles.
Mm.
So they can drive the car in normal conditions and listen for any unwanted noise and then try and isolate where that noise comes from. An amazing facility, but they have these little binaural mics that they can put inside the car to replicate the driver's position. So it's inside a head model. And then they have all these little mics down the side. They even have rows of them down the room where they can simulate drive-bys by triggering the mics in sequence.
But not that one.
Sort of, because the mics sort of work the same way. But they have a whole division who then monitor that information, and then they have a full analysis of how sound travels through all the materials that are normally used in cars. So they'll say, ah, yeah, you've got this crazy rattle at 422 hertz. That's probably this plastic that you're using in your dash, and if you replace that plastic with this plastic, that noise goes away. So that's the type of thing they do. But obviously, a lot of standard cars don't go through that, but people like Aston Martin and Bentley will take their cars there because obviously they want the very refined experience. It's a high-quality product. And the last thing you want is a crazy squeaking noise coming from somewhere it shouldn't, if you're spending $100,000 on a car.
Is that why they don't vent the exhaust, because it's part of the sound signature?
They do have the option to vent the exhaust, but we didn't want the fans on because they were affecting the microphones. So, bad call on my part.
Yeah, better that you pass out, right?
Yes. But I did mention in my opening that it can be a dangerous world. An interesting story there is, if the dyno operator tells you it's okay to put a four-wheel drive car on a two-wheel drive dyno because he knows how to disable the front wheels, he's lying. As we were trying to record a Porsche 911 Turbo once, and we only had a two-wheel drive facility available to us, and we put chocks under the front wheels just in case. What happens is, if you're doing 140 miles an hour and then the front wheels start to spin, it sucks the chock under the wheel and out the other side at a very high speed. If that happens to hit you, I can tell you, it bloody hurts. And, yes, I have the broken bones to prove it.
Surprised you survived.
It hit me on the foot. Okay. And the next thing I knew, I was sideways in the air. And then into the floor. And not a fun day.
What you learn from?
What did the dino guys say after that?
Oops.
Well, they were more concerned because as the wheels spun up, it actually dug a divot into their floor.
Oh, God.
Oh. Look at my floor and look at my foot. So, sorry. As I prefer to call this stage, let's have a heated debate.
How about sample rates and bit depth? Do you have any concerns or any... I mean, you can probably do whatever you want, though.
We always record at the highest we can. So if we're recording a car, up until about 3 years ago, everything was done at 48:24, and now we can record at 96:24. When it comes to actually putting them in the game, it's all about how do you make it fit in that memory budget. So we try and keep everything as high quality as possible. Most content is 48. Some content we drop to 36. Some we'll drop to 24. We've just got to make it fit in the memory that we've got. But like, we create a lot of the dedicated LFE sounds that we were talking about before. Obviously, we can have those at really low sample rates because they're only coming out the LFE anyway. So it's all about playing around with finding the balance between quality and sample size. The game engine deals with it automatically. It'll just pitch correct it back to the native 48.
So lots of resampling somewhere in there.
Yes. That's where all that CPU budget goes. Well, the thing is, in a lot of games where you're just playing sort of fixed one-shot sounds, you don't need to pitch shift many of them. But in a game like ours, we're applying Doppler shift to virtually everything anyway. There's already a resampler running on that sound to apply that, so we can just use that same resampler to put it back to 48 where it needs to be.
On Forza, were you mostly fading between loops for your engine sounds? Are you doing synthesis or a little of both?
That's confidential.
Okay.
we've used many techniques over the years. A bit of both is probably the closest I'm going to reveal at this point. Don't want to give too much away.
When you're cutting your loops, you do it on phase, so when you blend or crossfade between them, you have minimal phasing?
Yes. All the loops that we cut are loop aligned to the same cylinder fire. So when you're looking at a waveform of a car recording, you can actually count the cylinders because it always happens in patterns. So you'll be able to see it's a V8, and you'll notice that there are 8 peaks in a pattern, and then the same repeating 8 peaks in a pattern. So we'll always make sure it's on the same cylinder fire, and all those sounds will be kicked off at the same time. So theoretically, it should always stay in sync as you go through the rev range. That's a fun system to build.
Does that also apply for the rotaries?
Yes, because they still have a firing order. It's just only 2, 3, or 4, so it's less prominent. But yes, they do still have an obvious... If you look at the waveforms, you can clearly see how the engine works.
Since it's a rotor and just 3 chambers, can you hear each chamber?
Yeah.
Okay, so 2 rotor has 6 peaks you can pick out.
No, it has 2 peaks.
2 peaks.
A 2 rotor has 2 peaks.
Okay, so the 3 chambers within that rotor don't sound different?
No.
Okay.
No, you can clearly see that it'll be a 2, 4, and 8. You can also sometimes see, which you can't see with the rotaries, is, like I said, the engine's got the crankshaft has to revolve twice to complete. All pistons have to fire twice for one full rotation. And you can actually see the subtle variation between the two as the pistons are actually ever so slight. The overall sound is very slightly different because of the order of the firing and the way the crankshaft rotates. So you can actually see that it's not actually a pattern of 8, it's a pattern of 16 with 2 very similar 8 parts in it. So.
Yeah, can you point to any landmark games, racing games, that have finally a
new Every racing game's had something about it, even the ones that aren't personally my taste. You know, even going back to Pole Position and its hideously synthesized engine loops, but it was trying to replicate that sound of an engine revving up and down. So big steps were taken when we finally got to use samples properly as we sort of went into the 32-bit era. Most of the 16-bit games were synthesized, but with 32-bit we actually got to start using samples for the first time, so that was a big step. The Need for Speed Underground, I believe, was the first game that used granular synthesis for the first time, so that was probably a big step in evolution. Don't want to blow my own trumpet, but I will anyway. PGR was the first game to properly mix a racing game in 5.1. And work with that. So there was a lot of things that there are a lot of benchmarks over the years, but every game brings its own character. You know, I've worked on both of these games, but they're very, very different sounding games. It's the aesthetic is as important sometimes as the techniques that you use to build them. Anything else?
I have tons of questions. An Xbox setup, it knows how many speakers that you have, but it doesn't know anything about the quality. Can you use something like a Kinect to listen to the living room and say, hey, these speakers are pretty good, I can do this? Versus, no.
Would be lovely if you could, but no. But we do have options in a lot of these games now. Forza and Blur both have them. Actually, if we can do this. This is audio geekery at its finest. Is it going to work? So if I go, can I? So in this game, I have audio options: sound effects, music, menu music, licensed soundtrack on and off, dynamic range, home theater or TV. So we can play around with the dynamic range available. Your output, stereo or surround. And then you go into the interesting bit. You can now play around with your room size. Now, this is because of a system we developed whereby when you're mixing in 5.1, as an object travels through the room, you don't want it to go get loud, 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 full volume in this speaker, then loud in all the speakers, and then away again. How long does that bit where it actually travels through the room actually take? I don't know why we developed this, because it's far too complicated for a racing game. But anyway, I know why we did this. Scratch that. After we'd made Project Gotham Racing 2, I was asked to speak at a Dolby conference in London because it was, we were really pushing 5.1 hard. And it was done at BAFTA in the UK, in their theatre, in a cinema. And we're listening to the game, and I'm like, listen to this. And the car went across the room, and it sort of went, yep, chung. And it just missed this big chunk in the middle because it was mixed for almost as though all the speakers were together. And it sort of didn't really travel across the big theatre. So next time we demoed it, a few years later, we'd added auditorium as a room size, so it didn't do that. That's why we did it. So you can play around the room. So all this does is it alters how the distance. If I remember correctly, it was only metres. It was like 1.5 metre room, which was the size of my small mix room. Medium, which was about a sort of 3 metre square room. Large was an 8 metre square room, and then auditorium is like 25 metres between the speakers.
The user using this game doesn't know that. You're narrating it for us right
now. It basically means that if you live in Europe, you have a small house. If you live in America, you have a big house. And it allowed us to play around with it for different people. If you happen to present in the cinema, you have a mode that means it doesn't sound broken. Music mode, you could have your music in stereo, just the front two speakers, quad, duplicated front and back, or actually mixed in 5.1, if you wanted to. LFE boost, some people like a lot of LFE. So, with this, what we were actually doing is we weren't sending any of the game sound to the LFE by default. So any low end that happened to be in there wasn't ever getting sent to the LFE speakers unless the amp was doing it for you. What this would do, it would override that and it would do it for you anyway. So you'd get even more sub and it would turn up the LFE samples a little bit. Now we get into ultra geekery, where you can alter the angle of your speakers and adjust the panning angle in real time to better match the quality of your room. This is possibly the most pointless thing I've ever done, but it's really, really cool. So all it would do is the algorithm that worked out where a sound was relative to you. So we could play around with them. So I could move, if I remember, I could just play around with the speakers and adjust the angles. And let me see if I can get it right here. Start. And then I could actually do them offset as well. So if your room's not quite square, you can play around with them individually. So yeah, full on audio geekery there. Yeah, yes, I'm not going to break it completely. Okay.
No,
that's as far as I was prepared to go.
Yeah. So when you make the adjustments for the different rooms, are you just feeding parameters into the mix engine?
Yes. So it would know at what point it should start adjusting as a sound approached you. At what point it would reach that sort of point where it's at maximum volume in this speakers and then it starts to bleed across and then away again. So it was just adjusting the mix engine in real time. And the same thing with the speaker angles. It would just adjust that and compensate the mix to make sure. If you actually spent time and tuned it and got it exactly right, it should mean that you were getting the exact same experience I was getting in my mix room, which had speakers in perfect angles, because nobody can do that in a house.
You're married.
Yes. Any more?
So I'm curious, you mentioned that the Xbox, I believe you said, has a DSP chip in it. And I'm wondering, the hardware optimizations of that, are those exposed to you, or is that something that is just taken care of by the mix engine, as you say?
The DSP?
Yeah, if there's like hardware optimizations, like SIMD and all that jazz, is that something that's exposed that you have to kind of noodle with, or is that kind of just taken care of?
They were all custom effects that were written, so our coders had to deal with all that. And I just told them it didn't sound very good and to do it again. Until I was happy with the end result. So,
yeah, I'm just curious.
No, there was quite a bit of that to worry about. But with the 360, the old Xbox had the DSP chip. The 360, it's all done in software. So we have a huge suite of software effects running. Any more? Right, I have one more thing that you may enjoy. So, somebody asked before how we do collision recordings and how we do car drops. Well, back in 2004, I had a much smaller stomach and a lot more hair. But apart from that, we also went to a scrapyard, a sort of junkyard. We had a load of cars and we had a big hammer. And one of the guys who went with us was just one of our sort of, he wasn't an audio team member, he just came along for the day to film it. And he put together a little video that I would like to share with you now.
This is actually up on YouTube?
Yes.
Bring
up ourselves. Come on, internet. Oh, it worked before. Boom.
So it
dial-up. Can't dial up anymore.
Yeah.
Except 4,000.
So
that's the title we can use to search on, Bizarre Creations.
Audio Trip 2004. And one of those hits where he went into the light and all the stuff sprayed over the glass, I've still got the scars to prove where that came through from the busted lip. I got that there. So another dangerous point. We all had safety glasses, health and safety first, everybody. But it still
hurts.
Do
you wear ear protection when you're doing these 140 dB recordings?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, what was that? yes.
Double.
Most times we'll have ear defenders, big industrial ones. For cars like the 787B, we have earplugs, then ear defenders, and it still hurt. Yeah. It hurt a lot. The backfire was my favourite on that one, the first time it backfired. We were using a type of dyno called a Dynapack, where it's not a roller in the ground. You actually bolt the car direct, the hubs directly into these boxes, and the wheels drive, so you've got no roller noise. It's great. But the exhaust pointed straight onto one of these hubs. So we just got this huge blast of hot air going onto this thing that was controlling how the car drove. And it's like, can't have that. So we got this huge sheet of metal. It took two of us to lift it. It was like this big, this tall, about this thick. We put it down, it backfired, and the thing jumped 4 feet in the air. Scared us all to death. Especially when there's a $2 million car next to it that it missed by about this much.
One of a kind.
Yes. So, any more questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.